Hey folks, it's Mark here, Unsung Podcast, joined by the intellectual Chris.
Chris with glasses.
Chris with glasses.
Dr. Chris.
He's removed his pen this time though. So.
I've had it confiscated because I was clicking away. Hang on, got a backup here. It does make me feel smarter.
Yeah, but also as I'm a nightmare for you, edit, so.
Yeah, but it's on my head be it. So we had a fun time last time, Mark, a wee history lesson of the Balkan conflicts, yeah. And the evolution of...
That's why you tune into Unsung Podcast.
That and slinging shit at Biffy Clyro. No, as we said in the start of the last episode, this is us paying back to that great balance sheet in the sky for all the fun times we've had, saying that Health are literally one of the worst bands that's ever existed. We now have to return the favour by doing some original research.
Do not endorse that statement on Health.
No, Mark does not endorse that. I'm antagonising him along musical lines. A lot of division in this episode.
I can't for the life of me think why you'd do that given this weighty topic. Surely I should be antagonising you because of the shitness of this music.
This music is fucking trash, but it is incredibly complicated and fascinating. It's weird as well because it sounds like the antithesis of that. It sounds like absolute, like, shallow junk, most of it anyway, but it really isn't. And as we said in the last episode, the reason we're going into so much depth is because it was very easy for Vice to do a 12-minute documentary or whatever it was, where they just really ripped the piss out of the Balkans, ripped the piss out of this subject, and just totally belittled the whole thing. And there's plenty to laugh at. There's also plenty to absolutely fucking fear about this music. It's going to get pretty dark in this episode, frankly, and then it's going to get a bit lighter at the back of that. So here we go. The title I have at the top of this page, Turbo Folk and Serbian Nationalism.
We should probably say that you're going to hear some music in this episode.
Oh God.
And
well, they've heard music in the last episode. It's not like it's going to get any better, but
yeah, but like you're going to hear probably some pretty horrible stuff. You just won't be able to understand it.
Yeah, the chances are, unless you speak the
Serbian.
See, even saying the name of the language is contentious.
A few of these bands are definitely Serbian.
So
they sing in Serbian.
We're going to pick up where we left off after Tito died. Eventually in comes Milosevic in a very unstable and deteriorating situation, and he wants to kind of use the divisions between the urban and the rural populations to his advantage, a bit like Trump, as we said, you know, that's his audience. And so he sees Turbo Folk as a great way to both appeal to that crowd, and if he gets behind it, to maybe sort of nurture some of their feelings in a darker direction, you know, give them a little nudge off the edge of something. And he certainly does. So amidst a backdrop of conflict, hyperinflation, international sanctions, Turbo Folk, this ridiculous almost OTT gangster braggadocio thing that it had going on, like I said, farmers on Kawasaki's and things like that, you know, gave regular Serbs in particular a vision of, well, untainted sexuality, because sexuality was a big part of it, and unbridled luxury, because a Kawasaki to a farmer, that's a dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're ultimately working towards with those farms. So if you complete a farm, you win the Kawasaki.
Yeah.
At least that's what the album covers have, you think. So female singers in the genre wore heavy makeup, tight clothes. They had regularly had their looks further altered by cosmetic procedures, implants. They dated racketeers, they dated warlords, wealthy businessmen. And these guys, regardless of how well known it was that they came by their money via improper means, they became role models for young men.
Yeah, became folk heroes.
Yeah, folk heroes. Young men who had almost no employment prospects at that point and were facing a life in armed conflict, which was going on all around them.
Armed conflict is not on the immediate horizon for our young people, but there are people who are certainly quite misogynistic and also use similar imagery and ethics.
Do you mean ours as in like...
As in people in the West, as in people on this side of the world. Andrew Tate being probably the most obvious one. It's almost as if toxic masculinity just comes around in circles.
Yeah.
Regardless of what society you live in.
It's interesting though how readily it can be weaponized.
It doesn't take a lot to weaponize it.
No, it doesn't.
Especially when it's men that are pulling the levers, you know, of the men that are saying the shit.
That's a bit homoerotic.
That's what they don't want you to think. That's what they don't want you to say. They don't want you, that's the truth. That's the unvarnished truth. It's all men pulling each other's levers.
Yeah. Hyper masculinity, pulling each other's levers, mate. I bet you'd like me to pull your lever. I get a writer called Paul Hawkinos in issue 25 of a magazine called In These Times. Really good article. He says, Turbo Folk was more than an assault on the eardrums. It was a component of Serbia's political ideology, the score to which Milosevic orchestrated his 14 years of rule. On cheap videos, the industry's garish silicon queens glorified the violent, greed-driven lives of Serbia's gangster elite. For young people, especially those from the countryside, Turbo Folk's icons became the role models for making it in Serbia.
Can I ask a question here, right? You probably don't have the answer to it, but I need to throw the thought out here. A lot of that has got stuff in common with gangster rap.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which...
I think they identify a lot with that.
That's obviously quite ironic in some ways because of the nationalist aspect and they're railing against globalisation. Yeah. And
there's a twist in the tail, actually, at the end of this.
Cultural hegemony as well, you know. And that even back then, it's not like that music would have been easy to come by in that particular area of the world. It wouldn't have been here either, do you know what I mean?
Like, no, true.
The gangster rap stuff that... It got popular in, for example, in Britain, were the people who were leaving it behind. There were Snoop Dogg, it was Dr. Dre, it was all that kind of stuff. You know, people that were part of it, but were getting popular. Tupac and Biggie being the biggest examples, but they were definitely not as huge as Snoop and Dr. Dre, you know, because they'd have that crossover appeal. Some of the same buttons have been pushed, I think, and it's all about underprivileged communities, you know, looking for a way to clamber out of the murk and the mire, you know.
Yeah, lack of prospects, you know. Yeah, aspirational. I suppose living.
The difference, I guess, the caveat you need to chuck in here, though, is like gangster rap, a lot of it was also representation of the lives that these people had and the neighbourhoods they grew up in. And it was like mostly, if it wasn't glamorising it was also social commentary. This is a kind of different kind of
social
commentary.
There's an interesting twist in that so many of these people that were singing and doing this music were literally committing...
Yeah, they were actually in the army, you know.
Your man Slavoj Žižek has referred to Serbia under Milosevic as a, quote, carnival state. Where everything,
I like that.
Yeah, so he's good with a wee turn of phrase, Slavoj, where everything was permitted bar criticism of the leadership.
I like Žižek sometimes. Hmm? I like Žižek sometimes.
Yeah, he can be tough tune some other times. Radovan Karadzic and Milosevic represented permissive nationalism as opposed to a sort of typical stricter, more conservative form of nationalism that we would maybe usually think of. I think Trump's a bit like that as well. Ivana Kronja at University of Belgrade echoes that. She says, quote, Turbo Folk was used as an ideological weapon by the Milosevic regime, promoting a system of values that aimed to establish the cult of crime and violence, war profiteering, national chauvinism and provincialism, together with the abandonment of moral, education, legality and other civic values.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Turbo Folk really became a fucking cesspit under Milosevic. It was almost like celebrating throwing off all the shackles of decency. It was like, let's just glorify everything that we just... There's a hedonistic quality to it in that sense, but a hedonistic quality that was being used by the state.
I mean, that's totally where gangster rap is, like, completely the opposite of that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's coming from inner cities, which is the complete opposite.
Yeah,
Later on, when R&B starts to become bigger, you start to get a little bit more of the kind of glamorization of luxury lifestyle and stuff like that, but certainly didn't start out like that.
So against the backdrop of the wars, what was it like to be a Serbian citizen? It's important for us to acknowledge, I think, that the whilst the majority of the atrocities in the conflicts are somewhat accurately attributed to Serbian groups and affiliates, they happened on all sides. And Serbs had and often still have grievances with the way that the history has been portrayed, especially in the West. They say that their suffering and victimhood was minimised, and this in turn informs a lot of the sentiments that emerge in some of this music. Serb leaders who are labelled by the West as war criminals, rightly, such as former President Slobodan Milosevic, General Ratko Mladic, they're lauded as heroes by a lot of Serbians. Many see them as having acted in the best interests of the Serb nation, you know, looking to reclaim lands that rightfully belong to the Serb people and haven't been unfairly prosecuted. I think that's maybe an interesting point to turn to your kind of imagined history, you know, pseudo-historical stuff.
Lots of nationalism is prone to inventing traditions and inventing histories, you know. Eric Hobsbawm's in particular did quite a lot of work on this and about the idea of invented traditions. Mm-hmm. There are many academics out there that kind of situate turbo folk representations within the broader phenomenon of state-backed invented traditions.
Yeah.
So, like you just said, that's about reconstructing identities post-Yugoslavian collapse.
Yeah.
So one of the things that Hobsbawm kind of refers to in the concept of invented tradition is where certain practices, rituals or symbols are deliberately created and presented as part of a long-standing cultural heritage, mm-hmm. even if they're relatively recent innovations. These can serve various purposes, such as promoting social cohesion and national identity by forging a sense of shared history and values, legitimising the authority of a particular group or institution by connecting it to a seemingly timeless past, mm-hmm. Or creating a sense of continuity and stability in a rapidly changing world. Like all of them, if you've listened to the last episode, every single one of those things is at play,
yeah.
when it comes to this.
It's fascinating how that applies, you know, across left to right as well, because, I mean, we've just seen an incredible example of this when Tucker Carlson interviewed Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin engaged in a 30-minute pseudo-history lesson about Russia's supposed claims to the territory of Ukraine. Something that is demonstrably untrue based on what historical evidence we have, yet has been accepted wholesale by large portions of the Russian population.
Yeah.
But at the same time, at the opposite end of the spectrum, in Germany, in the early 20th century, you had the Völkisch movement. The Völkisch movement was a key part of the German Workers' Party, and the German Workers' Party became the National Socialists, mm-hmm. became the Nazis. And that Völkisch movement really relied on a completely fabricated history about these, it's quite fantastical, it's like, you know, almost like Scandinavian blonde giants, you know, the lost land of Tula and all this kind of, like, they took historical imaginings to ridiculous extents, but yet it formed the bedrock of this fake collective history that they then related to that enabled them to rally behind these causes. And clearly when somebody is able to do that, it gives them such a strong launching pad for their agenda.
Mm. I mean, it's important to know that not all traditions are invented. Hobsbawm's concept highlights that traditions are not always fixed or authentic, but they can be actively shaped and used to achieve specific social or political goals. A good example of this, and probably one which will actually help coalesce what this actually means in your head, and I say this as a Scottish person about to tell you about some Scottish stuff, but you'll be able to get it as soon as I start talking about it, right? Even if you're not Scottish. So a really good example is the creation of tartan. Everyone knows what tartan is, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone knows, quote unquote, knows that every single clan has their own tartan. That's bollocks. Tartans were invented in the 19th century as the UK was undergoing a period of romanticism about the ancient Celts, and there was a popularisation of the Highland myth. So in reality, the traditional Scots dress was plaid, which is kind of a tartan, but it was brown. Yeah. Because only people that had money could afford to get their clothes dyed. So clans didn't have their own tartans, you know? So they're really useful in creating a sense of nationalism and can be found also in the invention of folklore as well, which I think plays a big part in the turbo folk.
Yep.
All of these things have a really useful political, cultural purpose. You can see the same thing at play in Serbia there, you know, it's like these people are coming to the cities to get to find work and to become, to try and better themselves. They don't want to lose connection to that part of who they are. Conversely, there's people who live in the cities and they've maybe always been urbanised who are seeking a sense of nationalism, a sense of identity.
Yeah.
Are attracted by that
authenticity.
Yeah. That myth.
Yeah.
Of what their country
is. It's the same authenticity, you know, that American tourists come over claiming that they were part of the Clan McFarlane, you know, yeah, going back 200 years. But then again, that same titillation thing is us in the West and us on this podcast looking at the Balkans, mm-hmm, because it's so fucking terrifying at times.
Yeah, I mean, so that traditional folk imagery and the ethnic silence that adorn, like, all the performers probably of Turbo Folk, they reinforce that nationalistic sentiment. And they have a symbolic link to Serbia's village heritage among rapid urbanisation. So that whole representation is encapsulated in a paradoxical combination of old and new, sacred and profane. You know, all these things are thrown together in order to create a new kind of cultural identity, one that everybody, whether you're urban, whether you're rural, can identify with. And it makes swallowing that bitter pill of being constantly at war or having a grievance with your neighbours much, much easier to swallow, yeah, you know.
We're a long way away from making fun of Biffy Clyro right,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, really are. Really are.
Well, you know what? It's ironic, right? Because ultimately, the intensity of that nationalism that was being felt in Serbia and fostered by Milosevic would become so acute that it eventually rejected even Turbo Folk. Serena Ermitano, she's on that Scalar website, that excellent one, says, quote, "The latter years of Milosevic's presidency were characterised by a turn outwards, which was partially the result of internal unrest by nationalist intellectuals dissatisfied with the, quote, oriental stains within Turbo Folk."
That's quite interesting, because like his wife owned Pink TV, which was the propaganda organ for this kind of music.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but it wasn't pure enough for the pure Serbian culture of the monster he'd created. I mean, he had the extreme nationalists who were like, listen to this music, there's oriental stains in this music. So on one hand, for example, like Turbo Folk absorbed a lot of elements from dance and rave that we were listening to at the time, and it's always slightly naive, you know. It was always attempting to keep a pace with Western culture, but it always looked a bit kitsch and dated from our perspective, and it gave it a bit of a comical aspect. But on the other hand, Turbo Folk also illustrates that tussle between the Balkan, and by Balkan I think I mean especially Serbian, identity and the Ottoman legacy. Right, so the Ottoman Empire, this entire sort of like pan-Persian, Turkey, Mediterranean thing that brought a lot of Middle Eastern influences across, it relied on the mixing of those traditional ingredients with Oriental and Occidental musical influences. You know, by that I mean things like trilled vocals and Persian scales, mm-hmm, things like that you can still hear in these pop tunes.
Definitely.
For some of them, it was a reminder, and often an unwelcome reminder, of a certain Eastern ethnic heritage. So I think actually having cracked that subject, I do think we need to pay a little bit of attention to the place of the Gypsy and the Roma in this. So Mariana Sabino Salazar has observed that gypsiness in Serbian Turbo Folk is identified through the use of trilled vocals with microtonal progressions, flexibility of rhythm, dancing that emphasises hip movements, and lyrical themes of melancholy, love and romantic conflict. In that way, gypsiness and Turbo Folk has been linked to orientalised music practices that relate all the way back to Ottoman and Turkish music. And we will hear in these lyrics quite what a lot of Serbs think about Turkish influences. Oh, we will hear, mm-hmm, what they think of Turkish influences. So Serbian Turbo Folk musicians frequently use Romani themes and dance. You know, they play instruments or they sing in what they call the gypsy style. But it's a cruel irony, I think, that in Serbia, musicians can benefit from identifying with gypsiness, but actually being Roma is very stigmatized. So gypsy, the word refers to the image of, you know, the in their book, the traveling bohemian that has no nation and abides by no rules. It's quite romantic. Whereas the noun Roma and the adjective Romani are terms that relate to a people who have been persecuted severely for, you know, the past 800 years at least, on many different sides, not just by the Serbs. You know, both Croatia and Kosovo have problematic histories with regards to purges and victimisation. Many fled Kosovo for Serbia, and that actually led to an increase in their visibility in Serbian society. And when you notice an influx of a foreign people, or a perceived foreign people who seem different, that can cause tension. The celebrated Serbian pop singer, her name's Tatjana Tanja Savic, identified as Romani at the start of her career. When she signed to Grand Productions label, though, she began to deny any Roma roots. Again, according to Mariana Sabino Salazar, the lyrics to the song is, I'm going to try and pronounce this again, Suknica, supposedly metaphorically demonstrate her de-identification as Romani as her career began to take off. To understand why she did that, you've got to consider that although Roma are the second largest ethnic group in Serbia, they're also the most stigmatised and marginalised majority. They experience demonstrably higher poverty rates, unemployment and disease than the rest of Serbian citizenry. So that all said, there exists another more glaring cultural division in the context of the Turbo Folk conversation. You know, as it stands, right-wing Serbs today may well even still be drawn to Turbo Folk as a reminder of their political heyday during the 1990s, so it's not surprising that the genre encounters quite a bit of hostility in the territory of their former opponents in one of the largest of those armed conflicts, Croatia. However, as we've mentioned already, maybe more surprising is the fact that the genre has continued to thrive across the exact same borders and in that other culture. So, Croatian nationalism in opposition to Turbo Folk, and actually it emerges a Croatian rebranding of Turbo Folk for their own audience. Now, we touched on it earlier on, language is a badge of nationality, and this is quite significant, because depending on who you speak to, Serbo-Croatian might or might not even be a real language. That's kind of why I hesitated earlier on. Croatian nationalists think the Serbs and the Bosnians took their language, and the same works the other way around. The Serbs write in Cyrillic to reflect Russian proximity and, I think, cultural leanings as well, whereas the Croats use the Latin alphabet. I mean, they're closer to Italy, but also it kind of emphasises their opposition ideologically to the Russians as well. Pronunciation between the dialects is a point of sensitivity for many. I think it's been said that the idea of, you know, a successful chorus or hook in a popular hit catching on in your former opponent's dialect horrifies a lot of people. A writer called Maria Todorova notes that nothing stings some Croats more than what they call Serbian ikavica buzzing through their head. So ikavica is, I think, it's the dialect that they use. So again, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation here, but let's just say like mleko instead of mlieko in Croatian for milk. The subtle difference in accent, but it can be quite a triggering thing for people with strong nationalistic feelings. And an interesting example, actually, of an attempt to get past that can be found in the title of a song by a woman called Lepe Brena, who's a big figure in this genre. In 2018, in fact, her album was called, bear with me here, Zar je vajno dal se peva ili pjeva. Fuck knows how close that is. But it translates to, does it matter if it is sung or sung? And by sung or sung, you've got a Croatian and you've got a Serbian pronunciation there. The title of that album is alluding to, can we please get by these dialect differences here because they are clearly a remnant of this nationalist animosity. So I think an interesting look at the disputes over nationalist attitudes to language and things like cultural ownership is found in a documentary named Whose Is This Song? If you get a chance to watch this, it's available online for free. It stars somebody called Adela Piva. She's a musician, and she decided to try and source the origin of a particularly beloved song, which is, I know it's known in Turkey as On the Road to Üsküdar. She's Bulgarian by birth. She begins by assuming it's a traditional Bulgarian song, but in the journey throughout this film, it takes her through Greece, Macedonia, Albania, Turkey, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Serbia, and she discovers in each territory that song. She discovers in each territory they claim it to be theirs historically, and she also discovers a bucket load of ethnic hatred along the way, and it's a fascinating vessel to see that play out. But as I said, like, Croatia, it is a huge audience for Turbo Folk. It's been both resistant to it at times, and it's also been eager to sort of rebrand it at other times. So in Croatia, Turbo Folk is called Narodnjaci, after Narod, which means folk. But also, we said earlier on, it's called Čakija, which is a completely different word and was originally more derogatory, but has become a bit less so these days. The Croatian far right still regularly stands on this issue in quite a populist fashion. In 2016, Split became the first Croatian city to ban Turbo Folk at major events. There's a quote here: all musicians are members of the Croatian Music Union, and all of the DJs who will perform have a license for performance. We were looking for a list of songs that would not be patriotic, and in the previous years we had bands playing anything and everything. We do not want a programme that does not fit Split. A similar thing happened in Osijek, where Anto Djapic, I think it's pronounced, announced, as long as I am the mayor, there will be no nightclub singers of Čakija or Turbo Folk parades in a single municipal hall. And he's from, funnily enough, the Croatian Party of Rights, which is a far-right political party. Zoran Milanovic, prime minister and head of the Social Democratic Party, accused rivals of aiming to turn Croatia into the biggest Balkan nationalistic simple-minded kasaba. Kasaba apparently means a derogatory term for a small town. We are not Prunjavor, which is a small town in Bosnia. We do not celebrate Čakija. We are suppressing them, and this will be part of our programme. There was graffiti against Čeča's music in Imotski. It said, turn off all the Čeča's, light up the candles, Vukovar will never be forgotten. And it was done with a stylized letter U that represented the Ustasha, the fascist group that I mentioned earlier on. Vukovar is the scene of a war crime as well. There are occasional protests by war veterans and right-wingers when some of the Turbo Folk stars head to the likes of Zagreb. But to be fair, concerts at a Serbian singer called Djordje Balasovic attract the same response. So I don't really know how much we can take from those responses, because, I mean, Djordje Balasovic was a prominent Milosevic critic and an anti-war campaigner. Negde je imao imanje, to se znalo više manje, mada o tom nije pričao ni za leg. Trebao je biti veterinar, ali je tero neki inat, pa je živeo od kocke ceo vek. Ota je pratio karte, ko da vidi kroz njih, i uvek ladan ko špricer, uvek opasno tihi. So it seems that there's just protests when Serbs come. You know, it's not so much about their content.
Yeah, because one of the biggest singers is Severina.
Yeah.
One of the biggest pop stars in Croatia, and she is a Turbo Folk artist.
Yeah.
Wildly successful, very, very well respected as well as a musician.
But they were very tactical about how they defined her genre. Despite some of the hostility, Čakija is prominent in Croatian, as we said. Čeča is still very popular in Croatia, despite being the widow of a warlord who persecuted them. As a result, the webpage BalkanInsight.com, for example, ran an article about opposition to a Turbo Folk radio station that was opened called Extra FM. This is in Zagreb. The Vox Pops by the journalists included quotes like, This is embarrassing because the post-war era can still be felt here, and this is a degradation of culture that only people of a lower standard would listen to. So that same website, Balkan Insight, says the reason for the opposition in Zagreb is the officially declared cultural identity, because Zagreb wishes to represent itself both for tourists and in advertising and as a means of political propaganda as part of Central Europe. That's how their story goes. Zagreb looks westward. In most of Croatia, especially in Zagreb, the Balkans is actually a bit of a loaded term, used mainly in a kind of derogatory fashion to refer to their eastern neighbours, Bosnia, Serbia. I mentioned this earlier on, Maria Todorova calls that indicative of, quote, nesting Balkanism, which is that tendency in each of those countries to construct an identity around the fact that the country to your southeast is less civilised. So there's a lot of Croatian cultural pushback, and this led to a thing called Crodance, which is a fucking terrible name. Turbo Folk is a bad name, but it's kind of catchy. Crodance, C-R-O, dance is pish. In Croatia, Turbo Folk's frequently othered as a way to purify Croatian culture and music. There was an objective to sort of popularise a type of music that was seen to be strictly of Croatian origin. Another way that was done actually was it was called the Ratske. It was basically the Croatian Band-Aid. A group of Croatia's leading artists produced a song called Moja Domovina, My Homeland. They wrote that song, quote, with the purpose of mobilising Croatians behind the war effort to promote the Croatian cause abroad.
Nice.
Yep, total banger. You mentioned Severina. Severina's song and the music video, it translates as Dalmatian Girl, is a further prominent example of that kind of top-down attempt to impose strong Croatian rooted music that still appealed to this audience. So it was labelled Croatian pop as opposed to Turbo Folk for nationalist reasons. The song, by the way, lyrically starts off with, I am transparent like the government founders. What a fucking lyric.
Who wrote that? Was that a government founder?
Yeah, exactly. At this time, the new Croatia was only about 10 years old when that came out, and it was
searching. So it could very well have been one of the government founders.
It could well have been, because it was searching for a social and political identity. Yeah. What I think is a bit more thorny is that the performers in the music video dance with flags and costumes which reference the Ustasha state in Croatia during World War II, and we already described their complicity in a lot of what went on in collaboration with the Nazis. That's a bold choice, but the 90s were a time of historical revisionism in Croatia, and symbols from the fascist state, they were trying to reclaim them. The first president of Croatia, he'd stated that we wanted to unite the population, whether communist or fascist. Everyone was sort of coerced and urged to embrace Croatian identity above all of those subdivisions. So aspects of nationalism and contextual violence coexist in that version of Turbo Folk as well. Even songs that were about ethnic cleansing, they were getting like ample radio time and TV time. For example, there's a song called Cappuccino in Knin by Papa Geno and Nikita. So this came out in 1995. That was made to honour Operation Storm, which was glorifying the expulsion of 200,000 Serbians from Krajina, I think it's pronounced. The video as well sees them initially dressed like medieval Croatians, singing about their affection for their homeland, set against this backdrop of glorious countryside, you know, standard nationalist fucking patter here. And then it suddenly switches to them sitting casually drinking cappuccinos in the city, along with this dance beat. And yeah, the biggest names in Turbo Folk tend to be found on the Serbian side, though, as we've said, as do some of the most notorious marks. So I think we should take a look at some of those figures.
Oh, let's start off with the band Corridor. So they're a Serbian band, and they've got a song called Kmovi, I believe it is, but it means translates to Godfather, and it's in Croatian, and it's about the Ustaši group you're talking about. That's what the song's about. So that song's got over 2 million plays on Spotify. The only released one record.
He's fucking mad that it's still on Spotify.
There's really not a lot out there about them as a band. I did read on a Reddit thread that apparently one of the members was killed in action not long after the record came out. So I think they were all,
they were all active.
But yeah, they're a really interesting example. That's a really interesting example because they are clearly Serbian, because their other most popular song, let's butcher some pronunciations here.
Oi Alija Alijo.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, so I've translated the lyrics for that if you want.
Yeah,
some.
So have I. I've got it here. I guess, where do you want to start? Our poor sovereign Bosnia, now you lie destroyed because of Alija. Why have you proclaimed the sovereign Bosnia? May your head fall off your shoulders.
Oh God.
It's basically an Islamophobic piece of shit.
It's something else, isn't it?
Basically saying the Muslims have chosen the wrong side of the war and they will all die as a result.
Yeah, there's a little couplet here. And again, I want to say, we're quoting lyrics to really try and illustrate what this fucking genre was about at this time. So go with us here. Good faith, please. O Alija, Alija, Muslim bastards, thirsty Tudman will carry you across the water. O Alija, Alija, your limits are small. If you'd stayed with us, they would have been even bigger. There are no more Turkish pies made of the golden grain of Pusavi.
Yeah, how many Ramadans do you think you'll have?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's not a lot of information out there about these guys, really. One of the guys apparently died after this album was released.
Yeah, I think they were active but service.
Those two songs are quite popular from this era.
Yeah.
And also their record is apparently is one of the top 20 turbo folk records on Radio Music. It is number 17.
It's kind of a bit like when you dabble in black metal though, and you notice that, you know, there's some burzum in that.
I mean,
top list.
I say that, right? It has got a rating of, it's only had 13 ratings. So the average is 3.36, which is actually really, really decent in Rate Your Music out of 5.
Yeah.
If you're over like 3, you're usually doing all right. But that sits at number 17.
Probably tells you a lot about the people that are reviewing it.
Yeah, and that's from 1993.
I think whilst he's not the biggest, it probably makes sense as well early on to look at Rambo Amadeus.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a completely different proposition. He melded rap, folk, rock and communist nostalgia, and his take on turbo folk kind of tied in closely with ideas of social standing and economic background. He was addressing that, he was having a bit of fun with it, it was quite light. And the intro to Turbo Funk, which is a bit of a satirical piece on what became turbo folk and the fact that he'd kind of coined the term, he says, quote, like a hurricane that is preceded by a steep rise in air temperature and humidity, along with a simultaneous decline in air pressure, turbo folk is formed amidst the rising technologization of society alongside the simultaneous decline of its morals. So this is the guy that coined the term, reflecting on how turbo folk has come to symbolize the decline of his culture's moral fabric. And he was a Montenegrin Serbian, Rambo Amadeus, and his work in the late 80s actually set him in opposition to Slobodan Milosevic's regime and the rise of the criminal elite. During the Belgrade Spring Festival in 1992 in the heart of Serbia, he showed a great deal of courage. He interrupted a performance by somebody called Bebedol during a live TV broadcast to tell the viewers, quote, "As we play here, bombs are falling on Dubrovnik and Tuzla. We won't entertain the political voters no more. Fuck your mothers." He then threw the microphone on the ground and the show was stopped. That's a fucking brave thing to do in Serbia at that time. Many years later, he actually represented Montenegro in Eurovision 2012. Euro, don't be dogmatic, bureaucratic, you need to become pragmatic, to stop change, climatic, automatic, need contribution from the institution, to find solution for pollution, to save the children of the evolution. And he's also an official UNICEF ambassador.
Should we talk a little bit about Roki?
Sure.
Because he's also,
you can lead. He's one of your favourites.
He's also another piece of shit. He's not just my favourite, right? he's not a favourite at all. But if you go on Spotify and search for Turbo Folk Playlist, he comes up a lot.
Yes.
A lot. His album, Panteri, is also the most popular Turbo Folk record on Rate Your Music. So I got a 3.35 from over 220 ratings. So a lot of people have listened to this and liked it.
So this is Roki Vulović.
Roki Vulović is the guy I'm talking about. His most popular song is Panteri. Do you know about Panteri? You must know about Panteri, right?
A wee bit, yeah, but you take the lead.
So Panteri is about the Garda Panteri, which were led by Ljubica Bauzer Savic.
Yeah.
They were an elite youth who were really famous for multiple reasons. At the time, they were famous for receiving volunteers from Montenegro, but they were also, Panteri means panthers. They're also called Mauser's Guard. And they were initially part of Arkan's Serbian Volunteer Guard, but then they sort of split off and became their own thing. They were still really lovely guys who did not do any war crimes at all. And by that, I mean the Human Rights Watch says they did quite a lot of war crimes.
Yes.
The song Panteri, I'll just give you the chorus. Panteri, you are our Serbian guard. Panteri, the justice is on your side. Panteri, you are the pride of Mauser. Not even America has such an army. That is one of the most popular Turbo Folk songs of that period on Spotify. It sounds like shit. The lyrics are shit. The guy seems like a piece of shit. But yeah, that was in 1993. That was 2 years after sorry, 1992. Sorry, that was a year after the same war crimes. And I mean, I know Arkan was involved in quite a lot, but the main ones that Mauser's Guard were involved in was then. So yeah, he knew his market. He's got another album, another two albums actually, in the top 10, actually, if I'm totally honest.
Yeah.
So another song that's worth pointing out is Serce Bombardier, which means Black Bomber. And that song is mostly just about how they'll shoot down your stealth bombers. Basically, how the Serbians will shoot down the stealth bombers because they are like basically really really good fighters,
well armed.
Yeah, because some lyrics, don't pick a fight with a defiant Serb, so you'll lose your swarm of black bombers. Don't pick a fight with defiant Serbs, you lose your swarm of black bombers. That's the chorus. Brave and beautiful is my little homeland. For centuries, she has not given over her pride. It's kind of, it's mostly nationalistic bullshit. There's nothing particularly egregious about this one, but it's the second most famous song.
I mean, there's a couple of absolute, I mean, I use the word classic completely ironically, but Serbia Strong. It's a really big one, perhaps the most famous. I think it's also got Karadzic, Lead Your Serbs. I think that's part of the original title for it. And that refers to Radovan Karadzic, who was a Bosnian Serb military officer in 2016. As late as that, he was convicted of genocide. Maybe I got my date wrong there. The lyrics of the song proclaim that, quote, the entire Serbian land is attacked. It labels Croats as fascists, referencing the Ustasha, and Bosniaks as Turks. Warning both groups to be afraid of the Serb fighters. In the music video for that, the song has been played by two camouflage-clad soldiers, both of whom were later convicted of war crimes. Now, this is a particularly interesting song because it was also known by the kind of slang name Remove Kebab.
Yeah, I've seen that in a few Turbo Folk playlists.
Yeah, so which is clearly an Islamophobic reference to genocide against Bosniaks. And it was widely circulated on the internet as a meme in the last 10 years, especially among the far right. Remove Kebab became like far right toilet graffiti. It was actually something I've seen it. Like, I've seen somebody write Remove Kebab, and that got a massive shot in the arm because in 2019, the Christchurch mosque shooter, he played Serbia Strong before he went and committed those 49 murders of Muslims in the mosques.
I'm going to set my fucking Spotify algorithm on fire after this. Who's the artist for that?
Well, it's kind of technically by somebody called, God, here we go with the pronunciations, Jelko Grmusha. But I don't think it was, it's kind of like part of a propaganda video, isn't it? It's not really a song in its own right. Well, I mean, it became a song in its own right. It became incredibly popular. But it also shows the way the state was funding and helping to promote these songs. I mean, that is literally just a sanctioned video to stir up hatred.
Yeah, totally. There's some other offenders here. There's Miro Sembreja, who's got a song called Jado Bosno Surovjenja, which basically translates to Poor Sovereign Bosnia. And the refrain for that is, the time has come for Serbs' revenge. All mosques are flying to the clouds. Ante Azem and Tito are no more to protect you from the Serbs, which is basically saying that, hey, look, now that Tito's gone, all you Muslims are fair game. That's taken from one of his records. So he's also one of the top 10 top artists for Turbo Folk on Rate Your Music. And that song came out in 1993.
I think is the guy's name Samuel Farina? There's a track called My Dad is a War Criminal. That's like a popular Turbo Folk song that was used to mock the West's war crime prosecutions. It's set to like actually quite a chill Serbian tune, but the lyrics include things like, you can try condemning him, but no one has the balls to take him to court. And obviously it's trying to unite them under a nationalistic banner, painting the trials that resulted from the war crimes as persecution. But I mean, these are some of the absolute dog shit worst people that were involved in this. I think we can focus on a slightly more interesting and certainly much bigger personality in the form of Ceca.
Should we do that in the next episodes?
Absolutely. Let's do that, because there is a lot to say about this lady.
Yeah, so next week we'll pick up with more Turbo Folk.
What a hellish way to finish an episode.
I know.
God, those samples, man. Well, wow. Yeah.
Play something nice for a second. Let's talk about a song you've really liked recently from the 80s.
Blue album by Weezer was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it's very, very happy.
It came out at the same time.
It's from the 90s, aye. Let's play this out with it in the garage.